The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Roger Franklin Williams, Talking Old School, was recorded to air at this time.
Guys, welcome back to Talking Old School with Roger Franklin Williams, America's patriotic sports talk show. Great to be with you this evening. I want to thank you for the opportunity to join you. Of course, as many of you know, Talking Old School is where you'll hear in-depth interviews with Hall of Famers and legends from back in the day, as well as consistent, credible coverage of high school sports. Also, Talking Old School is where we honor the old school values of hard work, teamwork, respect for the game, and those old school off-the-field values of God, family, country. Talking Old School is the sports talk show where we honor and respect our American flag and the principles that it represents. Have a great show for you. Speaking of consistent coverage of high school sports, of course, it was great to have Coach Clayton, Skip Clayton of Lake Brantley, join us for his first appearance last week. And you know, certainly didn't hurt him too badly. The Patriots had a big 57-0 victory over Palmetto Ridge the following night. So, don't want to take too much credit for that. But anyway, it was certainly Coach Skip Clayton made a great debut on our show, and then followed it up with a great game for the Patriots, which now puts them at 2-1. Also, before we go to what we have, got great guests for you guys tonight, and we'll tell you about them in just a moment. But first of all, I want to, of course, let you know that Talking Old School is presented by Christner's Prime Steak and Lobster. And Christner's is where you'll find prime cuts of beef and cold water Australian lobster served in an atmosphere of old school elegance and sophistication. And, of course, they're conveniently located in Orlando, just on Lee Road, just two blocks west of I-4. A little bit later in our show, of course, Nebraska football has been big in the news this week with the firing of former national championship winning Nebraska quarterback Scott Frost, and of course, former UCF head coach Scott Frost. We're going to speak to a former Cornhuskers letterman, former letterman quarterback Zach Darlington, of course, former legendary outstanding quarterback at Apopka High School, will join us later in our show to talk about Nebraska football and specifically the time of Scott Frost and why he did not have success there in his return to Nebraska. But first of all, we are very pleased to be joined by one of the most colorful players in Florida Gator history, football history. In fact, he also went on and had a very impactful career in the early days of the Atlanta Falcons. As I said before, he played for the Gators in the mid to late 60s, where he was part of his role was Steve Spurrier's backup quarterback when the year Spurrier won the Heisman Trophy. He's also widely known as one of the most colorful and talented players in Florida Gator history. And, of course, as I mentioned, he played a significant role both on the field and off the field in the early days of the Atlanta Falcons franchise, late 60s and early 70s, when the Falcons were coached by NFL legend Norm Van Brocklin. And in fact, some of his best moments in the NFL are now immortalized on YouTube from NFL film highlights from that era. I could only be speaking about Gator legend Harmon Wages. And Harmon, it's great to catch up with you again. Thank you for joining us on Talking Old School.
Thank you, Roger. Listen, you can be my PR agent anytime you want to, buddy.
Well, you know, I had a unique vantage point in that, I was in elementary school back in the days that you were playing and really may have followed the Gators more passionately and more closely than any time in my life. Literally, my father was a huge Gator, took me to you know, the games frequently, of course, watched the game, the few games that were on television back in that era, on television. That included the Orange Bowl victory, which was Florida's very first New Year's Day Bowl victory, and you actually had a touchdown pass in that game, you know, coming in late in the game for Steve Spurrier. So anyway, you know, I really... really, you know, witnessed your career as a Gator, and then, of course, was very thrilled to see the success you had in the NFL with the Falcons. And that leads to the first question, in that, you know, you had a very different kind of a career at Florida. You came out of, if I'm not mistaken, Robert E. Lee High School in Jacksonville as a very highly recruited player. You know, once you got to Florida, Steve Spurrier was there. You were his backup as a quarterback, you know, you know, for your sophomore and junior years, and then your senior year, you played some, but you know, didn't, you know, start every game as a quarterback at Florida. And then next thing you know, you know, back in the days before the internet, you kind of disappeared for a couple of years, and then next thing you know, you're a starting running back with the Atlanta Falcons, coached by a very colorful character, Norm Van Brocklin. Can you kind of pick it up there for us and talk about how that whole transition and how you came from being college quarterback to NFL starting running back?
Okay, I'd be glad to. After the University of Florida, see, my senior year was going to be my year. But about a week before the opening of the season against Northwestern, I really broke, I should have broken it, but it was worse, a terrible sprained ankle. So I was out, and so I didn't get back until around the sixth or seventh game. And by then, Larry Rentz and Jack Ekdahl had taken over as quarterbacks. So I didn't have but one good game in college, and that was against Kentucky. So I knew I could play ball. My dad knew it. And so we decided, well, let's just give it a shot. I wasn't drafted, but drafted to play. So with Dad and I said, well, who's the worst team in football? It was the Atlanta Falcons. And we had family up there because mother and dad are from Atlanta, in Columbus, Georgia. So I flew myself up at my own expense, $44 ticket on Southern Airways, took a cab to the workout. It was a come one, come all workout. I had on white shoes and green shorts. Everybody else had already gone to the Falcon Stadium and had red shorts, black shoes. So I stood out right away. And then I just had a pretty good camp. I outran everybody and outthrew everybody. And so they decided, who is this guy? And so Tom Brotz, the general manager, we became general manager. He was the head scout. He signed me to a scholarship. He signed me to a, I got $2,000 to sign and $3,000 if I made the team and a $15,000 contract. That was a free agent. And to me, that was big money. I got $2,000 to sign instead of $2 million like you might today. I had a good workout. They signed me, and then what happened, I learned my way. They moved me to running back because every running back in camp, including our star, got hurt my rookie year. So we said, they said, we're going to move you to running back, which I said, no, you're not. I'm a quarterback. I'm a prima donna. You take care of me. You don't hit me. How dare you? Because if you hit Spurrier, you never saw the person hit him again. You never saw it. It disappeared. So I was used to that treatment. So anyway, the second year, I found my way to running back, and my dad had a heart condition because he smoked so much, Roger. And so my mother called me and told me, and somehow Van Brocklin found out. She swears she didn't tell him, but it was the last game my dad would be allowed to see in person, and that would be my second year, December 7th, Pearl Harbor Day, against the New Orleans Saints. Well, I was on my knees praying all week long. I said, man, not for me, not for me, but for my dad. Well, in that game, I set two records, the longest run in Falcon history, 66, the longest reception in Falcon history, 88, and I threw a touchdown, which gave me a hat trick, which has only been done 9 times in 102 years. And the highlight of that was Roger, my dad came up to me after the game in that old man shuffle, kind of shuffle along, and he said, Sonny boy, I didn't know you could do that. And so that was a great reward, a great answer to prayer, and my dad is buried with the game ball right now. So it was a great moment, and then I played 5 more years. I get the credit for 7, and moved to fullback, running back. I was not a super speedster, but I knew the difference between left and right, and that was a big asset sometimes because sometimes running backs didn't really have a concept of which way was right. Because, see, we had formations, red right, green right, blue right, white right, and that reversed the running back position, so it kind of got complicated. So that was just the basic history I had, and then I wound up going into sports casting like you. Like every jock wanted to be a sportscaster after football, and did 20 years of doing that. And I really enjoyed it. And I did the radio of the Falcon broadcast. I did the color for them. So I really had a good career, and it was all due to really being moved from running back, from quarterback to running back, where I established myself.
No, that's a phenomenal story, and it's something that I was been curious about all these years, and I know a lot of other Florida Gator fans have as well. Now, one of the parts of your story with the Falcons, as I mentioned before briefly, you had a coach who's known as a real character and a legendary figure in the NFL, not so much as a coach, but as from his days as a quarterback, you know, an NFL championship-winning quarterback with the Philadelphia Eagles and before that the L.A. Rams, Norm Van Brocklin. And, of course, he's well-known for his days as a coach as well, for a variety of reasons. But can you just talk about what it was like to play for Norm Van Brocklin and your specific relationship? And, you know, part of that, the question is, you know, a lot of players, I mean, most famously probably, you know, Fran Tarkin did not get along very well with Coach Norm Van Brocklin. Can you just talk about your experience?
Yeah, Van Brocklin was very fiery, and he hated to lose, and he was just he won the national championship, as you said, with the Phillies, the NFL. So he's a great coach and a great teacher. He really got on me because I had long blonde hair from Florida, and he believed in the Army air cut, you know, the white walls and the side, the landing strip on the forehead, the top of the head, the flat top. And I had long blonde hair from Florida. He got on my case, and I was a Florida player, and he just didn't like Florida players. If you didn't go to Ohio State, Oregon Duck like him, or Notre Dame, you know, he had that question whether you were a football player or not. So anyway, he rode me pretty hard. And then one day, after we got slaughtered by St. Louis and we lost five starters, he decided he was going to pick on me, and he'd had a few screwdrivers or Bloody Marys. He came up to me and he said, "Let's go. I want to see you in the bathroom." I said, "All right, let's go." I was ready for him. We got in there and got into a little squabble. And one thing led to another, and we got into a pretty good exchange of blows. And I gave him a good slug to the chin, and he loved it. And the next thing I know, he called me up Monday morning, apologized, said he got a little tidy with things because he just hates to lose. And I started the next week. And then it was after that that our rapport, we didn't speak much, but he didn't ride me like he had been. And he told me that the difference in me was when I stood up to him and, you know, we had, like I said, it came down to a fisticuffs a little bit. And then even Fran Tarkenton called me that night. He said, "Is it true? Did you really deck the Dutchman?" I said, "No, I didn't deck him. We just kind of went around tussle a little bit." And I said, "Norm, I earned his respect then." So that's when I started playing for Van Brocklin. He was fiery and he hated to lose more than anybody else, but I admire the man. He's a good man. You just have to know how to deal with him. That's on his own level.
Wow, what a phenomenal story. Thank you, guys. We're speaking with Harmon Wages, former Gator quarterback, and, of course, maybe even better known as running back for the Atlanta Falcons back in the early days of the franchise where he played, of course, for Coach Norm Van Brocklin. And that leads me to another question I've had all these years, Harmon, and you know, was you wore number 5 with the Falcons. If I'm not mistaken, you were number 16 with the Gators as a quarterback. But number 5, and that was the single-digit numbers back in those days were very, very rare. And I was always curious how you came to wear number 5 with the Falcons.
Okay, good story. L-E-U Carpenter, was a running back with the Green Bay Packers. His roommate was Paul Horning. When I was Lou was my backfield coach in Atlanta with the Atlanta Falcons. So the veterans get to stay out 15 minutes later, maybe 30 minutes later sometimes, than the rookies during training camp. And on Wednesday night, it's kind of a free night. You don't have meetings. So the veterans would always make the rookies drive them home because they might have had a couple beers. So anyway, I came home late two nights in a row on a Wednesday, and Lou Carpenter said, are you crazy? Said, you know, you're a rookie, you're not drafted, your chances of making the team are almost nil. I mean, you're nuts. Why? And I said, well, I didn't have a choice. The veterans made me drive them home because they drank too much beer. He said, oh, I get it. So then he says, you know, you remind me of my roommate in Green Bay, Paul Horning. He said, off the field. He emphasized off the field.
No, that's great, of course.
He said, if you somehow make the team, and he said somehow three or four times, if you somehow make this team, I'm going to give you number five. Well, it turns out everybody else got hurt. They did, or I wouldn't have made the team. So I did make the team. I came in, I peeked around the corner during the 40-man cut, the final cut. I peeked around the corner of the dressing room to see if I had a jersey hanging in my locker. And instead of number 23 and number 16 then, which I had my old number, and that had a couple numbers, instead there was number five. And that's how I got number five, was Paul Horning's roommate, Lou Carpenter, was my backfield coach. Because, you see, the head coach for the Atlanta Falcons before Van Brocklin was Norb Hecker, who came from under Lombardi at Green Bay. So he brought a lot of assistant coaches with him who had Green Bay affiliations with him before. So my backfield coach, also Paul Horning's roommate at Green Bay, was a coach. And that's how I got number five.
Wow, what a great story. Thank you for great insights. And guys, we're speaking with Harmon Wages, former, of course, Atlanta Falcons running back. He had one of the best days literally in NFL history on December the 7th, 1969, when he had a 66-yard touchdown run, an 88-yard touchdown reception, and a 16-yard touchdown pass. One of only nine times in NFL history a player has scored three different ways in a game. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll continue to speak with Harmon Wages, and maybe I have a chance to talk to him a little bit about his days as a Florida Gator during a great era of Florida Gator football, the mid to late 60s. Before we go to break, of course, I want to give a shout out to our friends over at Sheeler Auto Repair and let you know that if you, anybody that you know, friend, family, neighbor has car, truck, SUV, any vehicle that needs a place that will care for it with old school honesty, integrity, and dependability, I urge you to get over to see my friends Demetrius and Odysseus Virgos at Sheeler Auto Repair. They're located 1908 South Orange Awesome Trail, Apopka. We'll be right back on Talking Old School. Please stay with us. I'll go back. Guys, welcome back to Talking Old School with Roger Franklin Williams. It's great to be with you on a wonderful Saturday evening throughout Central Florida. I want to thank you for the opportunity to join you. Talking Old School is America's patriotic sports talk show. This is where we honor the old school values of hard work, teamwork, respect for the game, and those old school off-the-field values of God, family, country. A little bit later, we're going to hear from We're going to talk a bit about Nebraska football, specifically the big news that Scott Frost was relieved of duties earlier this week. And we'll speak with a former Apopka Blue Darter great and a former Nebraska scholarship letterman quarterback. Zach Darlington will join us to talk about the status of Nebraska Cornhuskers football on Talking Old School tonight. But in a moment, we're going to continue our conversation with Gator legend and Atlanta Falcons outstanding starting running back Harmon Wages on Talking Old School. But before we go back to Harmon, of course, I want to give a shout out to our friends over at Miller Sod Sales and let you know that the great people at Miller Sod Sales are dedicated to providing a quality experience for every single customer, every single time. They're a family-owned business. They were founded in 1995. Miller's Trucking and Sod Sales. get over and see him, and please tell him Roger Franklin Williams sent you. They're on Highway 441 in Apopka. Let's go back to Harmon Wages, Gator great, and Atlanta Falcons running back from the early 70s, late 60s. And, you know, Harmon, you're telling some great inside stories about your relationship with Coach Norm Van Brocklin, the tremendous day that you had on December 7th, 1969, where you became one of only 9 players in NFL history to score via a run from scrimmage, a pass reception, and a touchdown pass. And of course, I want to add to that, though, that those were not short touchdowns either. The run was a 66-yard run. The reception was an 88-yard catch and run. And then, of course, the pass was a 16-yard touchdown pass. You know, an amazing feat. And of course, you'd been a quarterback in college, and that's, you talked about the story of how you came to acquire the number of number 5. But now I'd like to talk a little bit about your college career as a Florida Gator, because once again, I guess like most things in your life, it was a little bit different and a little bit unusual in that, you know, you were widely recognized even by the fans as a very talented player. You basically got stuck behind Steve Spurrier your sophomore and junior years, and then, as you shared, you really never became the full-fledged starter your senior year for a variety of reasons. Can you just, you know, when you reflect back on your time at Florida, how do you feel about that? How do you feel about your career at Florida?
Well, Roger, there was a legendary sportscaster, Dick Stratton, in Jacksonville, Florida. He was a big Gator. And Gordon Thompson Chevrolet was a big Gator. And all I ever saw, if we go to church, Baptist church, where I was in the Baptist, if they didn't let you out at 5 to 12 to get home in time to see the Ray Graves show, they fired the minister because that's how popular Ray Graves was, and Dick Stratton had his show. So anyway, I went to Florida because I always wanted to be a Gator, and Ray Graves was a gentleman's coach. He was tutored under Bobby Dodd at Georgia Tech, and I got to know Bobby Dodd well. They're gentleman-type coaches, and Ray Graves was the class act. So I went to Florida because I wanted to go to Florida. I knew Spurrier was there. I also knew that I couldn't play as a freshman because freshmen could not play back in those days like they can now. So I sat on the bench. Well, I played my freshman year, but they had 5 quarterbacks. You know, Bobby Downs from Winter Haven, and Gerald Bramlett from Wildwood, a few other names. So freshmen were just like beating objects to play the scrimmage against the varsity. Now, my sophomore year, Spurrier was a junior, and then my junior year, he was a senior. So I played behind Spurrier, but I enjoyed watching him work because he was like watching a magician. Senior year, I hurt my ankle, didn't play. But I wanted to go to Florida. I always wanted to be a Gator, and that's just the way it was. Had I gone to another school, maybe I would have played, but I wouldn't have had the chance to do the Gatorade commercials. I wouldn't have had the chance to write this book. I'm writing The Butcher's Boy, which we talked about, because my daddy was a butcher. It's an autobiography that's coming out in, a couple of weeks, called, like I said, The Butcher's Boy. And it talks about everything in my life from day one, from being adopted, which I was, to finding out, you know, all kinds of things about yourself that you didn't know because you had to find out, first of all, from whence you came. So, being a Gator, I love being a Gator. Sometimes I'd say that maybe I should have gone to another school, but there wasn't any other school that I was even interested in. I flirted with North Carolina. I flirted with Georgia. Took a few trips, but I always wanted to be a Gator. It's as simple as that.
And I'll just add a few things from my own observation. You got, a significant amount of playing time. I don't know if you would agree with that, but in the role of Spurrier's backup, and you always played very well. In fact, you had a touchdown pass in the Orange Bowl victory over Georgia Tech, which was that's legendary within itself because it was Florida's very first New Year's Day bowl game win. And you whenever you did get on the field, you played well. And then you don't even know this, but I was talking to Jim Yarbrough one time about you, and he was just talking about the pure talent you had, and of course your size. You were a big for a quarterback and big for a running back. I guess you're about 6'2 or 6'3, and you're over 200. And he said that your style was very similar to Tim Tebow.
Well, Tito's a little bigger than me, and he got a nice left-handed southpaw cannon. Punjab, Jim Yarbrough's nickname was Punjab from that little Abner series because he was so big. I threw a touchdown pass to Punjab once because, you know, Roger, he was so tall, I just threw the ball up in the air like a balloon. And he reached up and grabbed it above all everybody else. So when you have Punjab or little Abner or Jim Yarbrough on there, you got an easy talent to make there. And we had good receivers. I had a long pass to Richard Trapp. He was my roommate. But something I'll tell you about Spurrier, see, Spurrier gave everybody nicknames. He gave Punjab that name. He called Richard Trapp Thunder. George Grandy was Lightning. And the Hog Brothers with Jim Yarbrough. The Hog Brothers was Wally Coulson, Jim P-Head Preston, and Jim Benson. They were the Hog Brothers because they were so big and chubby that they could move. So Steve was famous for giving everybody nicknames. One thing there.
That's great insights. And I will add, you know, when Jim Yarbrough shared that with me, that I looked up, you know, that Kentucky game where you did get the start and played an excellent game and a big win for Florida. Your stats were in that game were very similar to the Tebow-like stats. I mean, like I think you had like you were like 17 or 18, like 24 or 25, something like that. You threw for, I guess, close to 200 yards. You ran for about 75 yards. I think you had a touchdown pass, a couple of touchdown runs. So anyway, I just wanted to make that footnote.
That was my one game. Yeah, you're right, Roger. That was my one game in college where I had a chance to start. I was healthy. You see, as I said earlier, I had torn my ankle up, but I sprained it real bad. Early, like 2 weeks before, 1 week before the season opener. I didn't get back until it was time to play around the seventh game, but Ekdahl and Rentz had taken over the job, but Ekdahl broke his leg. Rentz had a problem that he couldn't do, a some knee problem. They called him the Blade. He was like 6'2", 135. So they had to play me, and I'm telling you, I was on my knees all week long. Just let me have one good game. And I did. I had a great ball game. That was the only game of my college career that I really excelled in. And that one game kind of got me a look from the Atlanta Falcons because they knew about that game.
And, of course, one thing I neglected to mention, this is radio, but yeah, and you were also well-known. You know, you were one of the higher-profile players, you know, during your year at Florida. And what part of that was, you know, of course, Gatorade was founded on the University of Florida campus. And back in those days, they had television commercials that were actually filmed at practice of you guys drinking Gatorade at practice. And you were kind of the player most prominently featured in those. And for those that don't know, the reason for that is because, without a doubt, Harmon Wages was the most handsome Gator football player of that era.
Well, let me tell you.
Which I guess was one reason Ben Brocklin didn't like you, right?
Well, the truth be known, Gatorade was going to be marketed in Northeast Florida first by Dr. Cade and whoever bought Gatorade at the time. It's changed hands. And so I was from a graduating senior from Jacksonville. So right place, right time, Roger, me, because I was a graduating senior from Jacksonville where they were going to market Gatorade first. So that helped being in the right place. I said at the right time. So they did the Gatorade commercials. I did those for like 20 years. And so it worked out really good. Like I said, if I'd gone to Georgia or North Carolina or somewhere else, I wouldn't have had the Gatorade commercials.
And
so it's funny how things work, yeah.
Yeah, and I'll just add, you know, quickly, too, I mean, and you were a very high-profile player during your era there at Florida. And then, of course, you went on and once you had a chance to get on the field, even though it was at running back, not quarterback, in the NFL, you excel there. In fact, I would say if you really scored all the NFL careers of every former Florida Gator football player, you would be right there at the top, you know, of having, you know, in terms of one of the more successful NFL careers. But anyway,
well,
Carmen, we're down to about our last minute or so, and I'd have you mention the book again. I really want to emphasize the book. And then I also want to say one thing we didn't get to, we'll have to save this for next time, is you also had quite a reputation, speaking of off the field, for your off the field, you know, success, shall we say, at Florida. But I guess we don't have time for that today. So tonight, maybe next time.
whatever you say, Roger, anytime.
But yeah, can you just mention the book one more time and how people can get it?
Oh, The Butcher's Boy?
Yes.
It'll be out in about 2 weeks. It's going to be And in the bookstores, they'll be handling it. We're going to have some signings at my daddy's grocery store in Jacksonville, and then at some bookstores, Barnes & Noble in Jacksonville and Atlanta. And we'll probably get down to Tampa in that area. So it should be out in a couple of weeks, called The Butcher's Boy, because my daddy was a real butcher. And so I was just his son, and who I was adopted by them, which is another story in itself, because that, I mean, I didn't have, it's a long story, but I had to be adopted.
Well, I look forward to reading all about it in the book. I encourage our listeners to get the book as well, The Butcher's Boy by Harmon Wages. And Harmon, it's great to catch up with you again, and look forward to speaking with you again soon.
I look forward to it. It was a pleasure. Thank you very much for your courtesy.
Harmon Wages, former Gator great, former Atlanta Falcons running back, record-setting running back, and author now of the book, The Butcher's Boy, Harmon Wages. Well, guys, we'll take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk some Nebraska Cornhuskers football with former Blue Darter outstanding quarterback Zach Darlington, and of course, he's also a former Nebraska Cornhuskers football letterman. Please stay with us on Talking Old School. Guys, welcome back to Talking Old School. Roger Franklin Williams, America's patriotic sports talk show. It's great to be with you, and thank you for the opportunity to join you on a wonderful Saturday evening throughout Central Florida. Hope you're enjoying the program. Hope you enjoyed that conversation with Harmon Wages, of course, one of the more colorful Florida Gators in the history of the program, and then, of course, primarily spent his career as a backup quarterback, mostly to Steve Spurrier, then went on as a starting running back, in fact, a record-setting starting running back in the NFL during the formative stages of the Atlanta Falcons franchise, where, of course, he played for NFL legend Norm Van Brocklin, another one of the more colorful characters in NFL history. Hope you really enjoyed those insights. And, of course, his book is The Butcher's Boy by Harmon Wages, and that'll be out soon. In a moment, we're going to shift gears, and we're going to talk about some college football, and of course, with one of our former Apopka Blue Darter greats, Zach Darlington. Of course, Cornhuskers have been in the news this week. Coach Scott Cross was fired as the coach at Nebraska, and we're going to look forward to having insights about the culture in the Nebraska program, and specifically the time that Scott Frost spent as head coach. Before we go to Zach, I want to, of course, remind you that our program is presented by Christner's Prime Steak and Lobster. And, of course, Christner's is where you'll find generous cuts of beef and cold water Australian lobster served in an atmosphere of old-school elegance and sophistication. And, of course, I also want to give a shout-out to the guys up at Apopka Moore and Equipment Repair, let you know that they are your one-stop headquarters for everything you'll need for all of your lawn and garden needs 365 days a year. But they also are the great place to get everything. They have everything you'll need for hurricane preparation as well, especially a big selection of generators at various price points and affordable prices. Of course, Apopka Moore and Equipment Repairs, where they only sell the best outdoor power equipment products and lawnmowers. You can find out more at apopkamower.com. That's apopkamower.com. Apopka Mower and Equipment Repair. It's where they sell the best, and they fix the rest. Now let's go to former Blue Darter great Zach Darlington, former Nebraska scholarship quarterback. Hello, Zach. It's great to catch up with you.
Hey, Roger. How you doing?
Doing great. It's always great speaking with you. And let's get right to the heart of the matter. You know, I, like many of our listeners, am a close observer of college football. And, you know, from my outsider's perspective, I was expecting Scott Frost to be a huge success at Nebraska, of course, with his heritage there and his legacy as a former national championship winning quarterback for the Cornhuskers. you certainly know a lot more about that than me or any of our listeners, because you were played for the Cornhuskers as a scholarship player, a quarterback. First of all, can you just share with us what your thoughts were about, you know, the reign, if you will, of Scott Frost and why it turned out like it did?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think just like if you could, you know, possibly write it up any better, it, you know, the perfect storybook, you know, I guess, plot to it where you've got, you know, Scott Frost, like you said, a just absolute Husker legend as a quarterback there. You know, winning a championship, going on into a coaching career, absolutely tearing it up, you know, in his early days with the likes of, you know, Oregon, then on to UCF, and, you know, the way that he and UCF really, you know, genuinely reshaped the college football landscape and you know, kind of what some of the big changes to the college football playoff that we're seeing. And then makes his trip back to Nebraska as kind of like, you know, the prodigal son coming home. And, you know, so you couldn't ask for a more storybook, you know, plot line. And it's really unfortunate that it went the way that it did. And, you know, I think that, you know, obviously he had a lot of time there. You know, he had a long time there. He had a really long tenure when you look at the you know, how long some, you know, former coaches have been there and the, you know, the records that they were putting out, you know, they were patient and they waited and they really tried to give him, you know, every chance he had. And so it's, you know, it is unfortunate. But you know, that's part of college football. And it's one of those things that just shows that, you know, doesn't always go the way that you plan. And, yeah, that's sometimes what's great about college football, and unfortunately in this situation, I think that's one of those things that kind of stings about college football.
And I'd like to get more in depth there, and guys, we're glad you're joining us on Talking Old School. We're speaking with Zach Darlington, former Blue Darter great and former Nebraska scholarship quarterback, about the Scott Frost tenure at Nebraska. Why do you think he didn't make it? I mean, what did he do? What did he not do? Obviously, whatever he did, you know, didn't work. What was he attempting to achieve? And how was,
you know,
he attempting to achieve
it? Yeah, I think that it's kind of tough. And, you know, it's tough to say, and I'm not gonna you know, stand up on a pedestal and say, oh, I know how it was going or this or that, you know, because it's a whole lot different when you're inside those walls. And so I remember when people tried to speculate on Coach Pelini's time there, and that's when I was there. And so it's hard to, from the outside looking in, give an accurate assessment of what was taking place and why it was not working. But I guess from my time there, all I can do is try to relate and imagine, you know, what may have been taking place. And I think that the biggest thing is, you know, you've got a huge culture there, and this culture that's been, you know, based and founded on this winning tradition, very, very, very blue collar, you know, group of people, not only as the football program, but just as the state of Nebraska as a whole. And so trying to get back to those roots, was really, I think, the goal. And, you know, honestly, I think that some of the challenge was just that the landscape of college football has come so far from that really gritty, you know, hard-nosed, blue-collar work ethic type, you know, approach and mentality. In fact, I think, you know, some may even try to make the argument that it's the furthest, you know, college football has ever been from that. So trying to restore that in an era where it's so far gone, just in general, in college football is going to be a challenge. And so, I think that what he ran into is just, you know, it's a restoration of the culture. And this truly shows that, you know, it goes a lot deeper than just in the locker room, you know, and inside that football program. I think that there's a lot of, you know, cultural change that has to take place. And I think that this shows that it goes beyond just the football field in general.
And very insightful, Zach. And we're speaking with Zach Darlington, former Nebraska scholarship quarterback, of course, also a former Blue Darter great, state championship winning Blue Darter great quarterback. You know, and I guess I've been proven wrong too, because you know that the Tom Osborne, and even for him, the Bob Devaney years are just imprinted on my mind, and I know exactly the way they built that program. You know, the big offensive linemen, the weight room that was ahead of college, everybody in college football back in those days. You know, most of the offensive linemen from the Midwest. You know, that literally those corn fed guys from the greater Midwest. Then they would bring in the really talented guys, you know, running backs and receivers, defensive backs from like New Jersey or California or whatever. And they had a huge walk-on program. In fact, I think they even had a whole dorm for just the walk-ons. And, you know, just that, as you said, the blue-collar approach to it, and would just overpower people, you know, with that line. Just the phrase, imposing your will on your opponent, I mean, you know, every time I hear that phrase, I visualize the Nebraska offensive line, you know, doing that to somebody. But I guess what you're saying, that's kind of might be all in the past now.
Well, and I think that it's definitely, it's not only is it something that's in the past, but it's necessary and it's needed. But I think that that's the challenge of what they're facing today, is it's not only, something that Nebraska is struggling to, recultivate. I think a lot of college football is struggling to recultivate that. I think you look at, just the idea of that nose to the grindstone mentality. Some people could really knock that when you talk about the transfer portal and when you are able to jump ship and go to different football operations so easily, that kind of grind it out and see it through. Process is can be lost in some people's eyes, and so I know that and I completely understand that everyone has their own situations and circumstances, and so I don't want to knock those people that utilize the opportunities that the transfer portal delivers, but I do think that it's fair to acknowledge and point out the overall kind of mentality or mindset that the transfer portal has also created. And I think in this situation, you can see that kind of is something that can point to just a little bit of a lack of that blue collar hard work and seeing things through that Nebraska's struggling with, and I think college football could be struggling with in across the country.
We're speaking with Zach Darlington, former Nebraska scholarship quarterback and former, of course, Apopka Blue Darter state championship winning quarterback, about the Nebraska football program and Scott Frost. Now I got and it looks like I know it's perplexing because and I follow Nebraska football closely and have nothing but the ultimate respect for them. And of course, they've really struggled in the post Tom Osborne years. And it looks like they've tried it both ways. You know, it looks like they tried to move away from the Tom Osborne, Bob Devaney culture. And, they tried the West Coast offense with Callahan at one time, after Solich was fired. And then they seem to have gone back, tried to go back to the Nebraska culture, maybe with Coach Pelini and then with Scott Frost. And so it seems like they've tried to work at both sides, and nothing has worked to this point. And you actually, I think, played for at least two, if not three, different head coaches at Nebraska. You were recruited by Coach Pelini, and then he was fired while you were there. What was it like when you were there, and that struggle to try to get a handle on the kind of reestablish a winning culture?
Well, I think that was probably, as we look back, I think that Nebraska is probably really regretting the decision to get rid of Coach Pelini. And I know there was a lot of stuff that went into that decision, but if you think about it, Roger, at the time, we had just had our ninth win, and we had beaten our rival, Iowa, in Iowa. And that's the last time we've beat Iowa, was with Coach Pelini. And they fired him the next morning. And so when you say we're wanting to get back to this tradition of winning, okay, to what extent? I mean, I understand Coach Pelini was struggling to, somewhat, I guess you could say, win the big ones and to get that 10th win. But I think that obviously everything we've done since Coach Pelini has been so far of a step backwards. It's been difficult to assess what our best decisions are and the direction that we're trying to head, because sometimes it seems like the decisions we're made are made off of someone hurting our feelings and not liking the way that Coach Pelini talks to people, rather than, okay, are 9 wins 9 wins? Because right now, we're getting 9 losses. So what is it that we're wanting? If we want someone that talks to us nice and handles the press nice, but we're getting 9 losses, is that a good trade-off? And I think that's where I think it was, difficult to kind of see it through as far as understanding their decision-making on, relieving Coach Pelini. Because I only got one season there under him. However, I did get to see and be a part of the, hardworking program that he was, a part of building. And I can tell you without a doubt, unfortunately, that was lost the minute, the minute we moved Coach Pelini and we tried to then, put in and establish, another foundation for, the program moving forward.
Well, Zach, it's been great to catch up with you. Thank you for sharing these excellent insights. We'll really appreciate you joining us on Talking Old School. And, guys, I want to thank you for joining us tonight on Talking Old School. And we'll end with our old school wisdom. And this is from President John F. Kennedy. Over the course of the next decade, we choose to go to the moon and to do other great things, not because they are easy, but because they are hard. Guys, have a great night.
Are you reeling in the years, stowing away the time? Are you gathering up the tears? Have you had enough of mine?
3-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.